Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell, and it's my pleasure today to be joined by Court Bauer, who is the executive producer of the AAA Triple Mania pay-per-view that comes your way Sunday, August 9th from Mexico City. And, Court, I want to start there. Hey, you were with, obviously you did MLW, then you were a WWE creative team member. You worked with Ring of Honor. And then there was some talk of maybe you're going to do something with Lucha Underground. How did the whole AAA thing come together?
Well, I've known Dorian Rodan, who's the executive vice president over at AAA, for about 2 years now. And we've just kept in regular contact. And the timing worked out that he wanted to pursue this and to expand their reach in the English language space. I can't even speak English this morning. Once he decided to green light that, off to the races we went. And Triple Mania on pay-per-view is stage one and part of stage one of our bigger plan. So it's a fun experience. It's been a unique experience, and I think in wrestling, most people, when you go from company to company, it's a different vibe. It's a different opportunity, different challenges, and it's been pretty cool to jump in with AAA. So I actually started out in the late 90s. Gary Albright got me in sort of with All Japan. So I kind of half-assed work with them before I even had MLW, because I broke in with the Samoans. Gary Albright was a son-in-law of AFA. He had married one of AFA's daughters. So I worked with All Japan and then did MLW. So now I'm trying to cover every region I can. I still got Puerto Rico. I still got the United Kingdom to hit. I still got to hit Canada somehow. So, I want to be that globetrotter. I'm only 36. I still got some time left.
TNA, I mean, it's in this country, but in its own way, it's in another world.
An alternate universe?
There you go.
Where logic need not apply.
Was that you in the Bigfoot outfit?
I'll tell you, I think Bigfoot's going to be a bigger ratings draw than most of the stuff out there for Destination America as they, quote unquote, test their programming throughout Wednesday nights.
Hey, now so you're the executive producer of this show. Are you with AAA, or is this more like you're what Jeff Jarrett was for the New Japan pay-per-view airing in the United States?
No, I'm working on a lot of other stuff. In terms, like I said, I'm working to help spearhead some of their English language initiatives, and that's vague because it's designed to be vague. As each of those things kind of roll out, you'll kind of see what else I have my hands on. But this is part one of that.
So this isn't like, hopefully this thing does extremely well, but God forbid this thing bombs, we're not going to have to hold like special benefit shows for Court Bauer to like give you some money, are we?
I don't think anyone's going to be holding any benefit shows for me, but way to kick off this podcast on a downer, man. Jeez, set the tone. Holy shit. Jason Powell, come on, man. No, here's the thing about this. There's like virtually no risk associated with it because they already have the satellite truck. In fact, I was dealing with those kind of logistics just before I got on with you. They already have a satellite truck with an uplink right there at the arena. So that's usually a very cost prohibitive upgrade for companies. That was already there because that's something they do for all their major shows. And so all they're doing is beaming those coordinates to the states, and the states are picking up those coordinates and putting that out there on pay-per-view. The arena, the production, it's all going to be cutting edge, big entrances. They have like almost that WWE level of entrances. So they're very elaborate. The pageantry is there. It's a state-of-the-art arena and all that stuff. So you're going to have 20,000 fans screaming with great lighting, big entrances. They did an entrance recently with the Psycho Circus where they did the Mad Max guitar where it was flaming and everything.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like these guys – I mean, like, it's going to be – it's the production level's better than anyone but WWE, what you're used to. It's up there. I mean, people that like the New Japan production level for their big shows – It might eclipse that. I can tell you there's going to be we have a deal with Paramount Pictures where we're going to cross-promote Mission Impossible. So they're going to have some of that scenery for Mission Impossible, some of the signage for Mission Impossible. I understand even possibly the plane will be part of the entrance for Triple Mania. So there's going to be a big fight feel to this. It's not just going to be some kind of like, hey, we're going on pay-per-view. But again, it's all strategic moves that basically avoid all risk. So it's win-win, and we just look at this as part of building the foundation for something grander and pay-per-view step one, and this pay-per-view in particular, which is a showcase show. I mean, you have a lot of star power. You're going to have high production value. You have Alberto on the show. You have Rey Mysterio on the show. The former Sin Cara and Mystico, Mystis Seas, is on the show. Jack Evans and Helico, that you might be familiar with from Lucha Underground. You have English commentary, which is a big clutch thing. You have Matt Stryker and Hugo Savinovich doing English commentary. But this is step one in rolling out AAA to the English-speaking audience, and it is one step of many that we need to take, but we're looking to do some pretty cool things, and hopefully we can get to all those things in short order.
Hey, is this like the New Japan show, where if there's people out there that just are used to seeing AAA and hearing the Spanish broadcast team, they have that option?
Yep, and again, for fans across the world, you can get this online as a streaming pay-per-view, TripleMania, PPV.com, and it's available not only in English commentary on that version, not only Spanish commentary on that version, but also Japanese. So you'll be able to listen to this in three different languages, and the same for in English. You can also have the option of flipping it to the Spanish to hear the Spanish broadcast team. So we're trying to be as flexible as we can and expose this product to as many people as we can. But there have been, I'll tell you, having worked in a lot of offices now, the AAA office is full of young people that work their asses off, very talented. I haven't had a weekend off since we've started this project, and they work just as hard as I am. They're working like late until the night, you know, Friday, 11:30 at night, we're passing emails back and forth. Saturday, we're working all day. Sunday, the same thing. And they're very talented, just their graphics artists, their production team, really talented people, really ambitious. It's great to work with people that have that work ethic that want to go. Very similar to WWE. If I could compare this office to any office, it's that very talented, high caliber people that are driven, and they put in the time and the work, and the results are really impressive. I've been really pleasantly surprised. It's really cool.
How long has this been in the works? I was kind of surprised that the announcement came so close to the pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, it's something that this particular one came together rather quickly. Let's say by 4th of July, it wasn't something that we were anticipating was going to happen. And then it happened. And so we've been running around. This whole week, I actually just finished up producing the pre-show. We shot that here in New York with Matt Stryker and Hugo, and we're going to drop that very soon, and you'll be able to see that on the pay-per-view channel, but also on AAALucha.com. That's AAALucha.com. That's the English-speaking site. And it's right now, it's a soft launch. As time goes on, you're going to see a lot more content on there. Now you get a little bit of the backgrounds and some of the rivalries. You'll see the roster. You'll know the matches and stuff. There's some video content. You can see the roster, but as time goes on, it'll like any website, it gets more full of content. So it's what I call a quote unquote soft launch. I think as we get into September, October, you're going to see it enriched with a lot more.
Now, Lucha Underground hasn't done big numbers, but,
right?
You know, part of it is they're on El Rey Network, but has the critical acclaim, has that played a part in nudging Triple A into making this move, or just a complete coincidence?
No, I think, you know, it's good that Lucha Underground's been getting positive reviews. It's heartbreaking that they're not enough households, but that's out of their reach right now because they are partnered with El Rey Network, which has been very supportive. If you look at networks, great example, Destination America, and how they've waffled on wrestling, haven't been a great partner to TNA, now maybe not a great partner to Ring of Honor. They've been kicked to 11 o'clock. Whereas El Rey, they'll do marathons. They're double down on this thing. But the problem is I can't get it in New York. A lot of people can't get this channel, which, you know, it's sad, but hopefully that's something that as time goes on, this channel grows and then Lucha Underground grows, because they have an amazing production value in that product. Eric Van Wagenen and Krista Joseph, they're doing some real cool things, and they got a very talented crew in the ring and behind the scenes, but it didn't have any direct correlation to what we're doing with the English language expansion. It just, you know, you look at the last 18 months, AAA has signed three of the big agents. They've signed Alberto, they signed Mysticis, and now they got Rey Mysterio. And, you know, those guys, of course, aren't going to come cheap. So you got to also find ways to create new revenue streams. And where these guys – very viable, not just in Spanish language markets, but of course in the United States and Canada and in the United Kingdom and Ireland, where you have a huge English speaking crowds and huge wrestling crowds. So the timing lined up to try to monetize this investment, these acquisitions, and one of those things is pay-per-view. And but you know, our expectations aren't that this thing's going to do crazy numbers. Like I said, the risk isn't there. So right now we're looking at this as elbowing our way into the space. Hopefully we get some commercials run through this week, or you know, through the Ronda Rousey fight, and that gets us what we need, and it gets us a little bit more exposure. This is step one, you know, of many steps. So we know it's going to be one of those processes that, like, anyone wants that instant gratification. They want to see instant results, instant success. We're patient with this. We know that you know, we want to avoid risk. We want to do the right moves and slowly build this thing. And we have, unlike a lot of companies, the luxury of having some good star power behind us. And then underneath that, if you just say, oh, I'm familiar with that guy and you have great production value, but let me check out the whole show, you see, wow, that undercard is full of cutting edge next generation talent, you know, really, really fast, quick guys like Angelico, like Drago, like Fenix and Aerostar and all those guys. And the women like Taya, awesome. And Goya Kong, Super Porky's daughter, she's very charismatic. She's going to be a big star. So it's a real big roster too. They have over 100 guys and girls signed. Wow. That's a big freaking roster. And I verified that number. I asked her, I was like, so is this hype, or do you actually have 100 people? Like, no, technically we have 100 people. I'm like, my goodness. So they're big. They're running shows all the time. And if you watch their show, you can watch on their YouTube channel, their weekly show. You'll see that the production value is fucking astonishing. It's really impressive.
How, just to stick with the Lucha Underground theme here, mm-hmm, for a second. It, now that you guys are branching into the United States, obviously there's a lot of crossover there as far as talent and even Matt Stryker. Is there still a level of partnership if they come back for a second season, or is it going to be a little more, I don't want to say cutthroat, but I mean, is it, you're going to have to kind of sever those ties to some extent because you are competing in the same market now?
Well, no, there's cross-collaboration. There's a partnership. Dorian Roldan, the executive vice president of AAA, is an EP on Lucha Underground. You see the talent that's come in. They've acknowledged AAA on their show. They're in a different space in where they're looking to take this creatively. If you watch the show, you see a supernatural element to Lucha Underground. You see it's more like a comic book than it is traditional wrestling.
Yeah.
Their end game, their vision for this is to really replicate more of what Marvel Comics is doing. They want to do a movie with superheroes and those kind of themes, TV programming like that, cartoons like that. So they're looking to go into a different space than the traditional wrestling company and their revenue streams and what their avenues are. And I think it's going to be, I mean, they're going to have a really interesting opportunity because there's really no one competing in that space with those kind of characters. Whereas AAA is, it's your traditional wrestling company. The presentation, the angles, I mean, it's if you're familiar with the AAA from back in the day when they had Rey Mysterio in the 90s and they had Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr and Chris Benoit, Conan and Psychosis and Juventud, you can remember that product, it's pretty much the same in that you have the traditional angles, you have heat and you have promos. It's very traditional, whereas in Lucha Underground, you have a very cinematic feel. It feels like you have like those soap opera kind of vibe to what's going on. You have the Dario Cueto character and scheming in his office, and it's the way they shoot it. It's really its own animal, and I guess it's almost like they have somewhat of a shared universe, but the Lucha Underground product's more on the cinematic end of that universe. But they're not looking to do like Lucha Underground pay per view and the stuff we got coming down the road. They're looking to go in a different space. And at the end of the day, if AAA and Lucha Underground can be successful across the board and all these things, it's going to be very helpful for the big picture. And I think that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Do you expect them to get that second season?
I've been told the announcement could come any day.
But I think we've heard that for like 2 months.
Right.
Not from you, but just in general.
Right. No, it's one of those things where that's not my area, where I'm not dealing with any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I am not privy to any of those conversations. That's all I've been told, like you. So I hope they do, because I think it's a really cool show. And anytime any company, any TV series that's wrestling centric fails, that's not WWE, it just proves to cable networks, content partners, licensing partners, that only Vince can do this. And I think we both know that that's bullshit. But for this to work, you have to have a lot of things click. They obviously aren't the most they're not a low end production. They really do a great job with their vignettes. They do, in terms of post production, they put the money in, and they have to find a way to make this a solvent venture, make this so you're in the black and not bleeding in the red. And so hopefully that happens. I mean, El Rey wants him back, but again, I think Eric Van Wagenen mentioned this on a Steve Austin podcast. It's just trying to bridge the gap. And, I think they have enough talented people with an expertise in negotiating, like John Fogelman, who's intricately involved at the executive level of Lucha Underground, to find a way to bridge that gap. He's no dummy. He worked and started up J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot house. And so I think that he's probably equipped to handle this, given his background. He was part of the big merger with William Morris Endeavor. So, I mean, this isn't some guy that just wants to do something in wrestling. I've met him. I've hung out with him. He's a shrewd, sharp dude. So I have faith that there will be. Is it happening as fast as everyone wanted to? No, of course not. And is everyone in wrestling going to be skeptical until something happens? Yeah. They were skeptical before Lucha Underground Season 1. They're going to be skeptical every step of the way until you see continuity and you can see consistency in that. Okay, Season 1 ends. Season 2 starts in 4 weeks. Season 3, boom, boom, boom. That's just the nature of a startup. I mean, people don't have those questions about WWE because they've been doing it forever. You have to show that, and it takes time.
And maybe you'll disagree with this statement, but it seems like, for whatever reason, New Japan has had a stronger base in the United States than Lucha has. First off, do you agree with that? And if so, what is it why the disconnect? Why hasn't Lucha caught on here as much as New Japan has with so many people?
I think it comes down to exposure. Until basically the last few months, Lucha didn't have any exposure, but it did in the 90s, and it did huge business. It did big business in New York, Chicago, LA, up and down the West Coast. And because they had TV, they had exposure. And with New Japan, they had their guys involved with the NWA in the last 2 or 3 years, Ring of Honor, and now Global Force Wrestling. And now they have an Access TV show. That's exposure. That's exposure in key markets, is exposure on TV, and that's built their profile. Lucha hasn't had that. It just hasn't had that until recently. And so I think that's been a big thing. You're going to always have that fringy following for something, but unless you have some sort of platform to deliver content to the masses – it's going to be very hard to fucking get a following. How do people demand something that they aren't aware of? And I think that's had a lot to do with it. Since Lucha Underground has started up, though, I've seen guys from AAA get booked in Tennessee in the last few months. Think about that. So it's coming around, and I think it will happen. But again, it's just, what did everyone have exposure to first? It was only 3 years ago, 4 years ago that about 4 years ago that New Japan was in the slumps. I mean, they had some ownership issues. The booking was really brutal throughout most of the 2000s, but they had a regime change. They restarted that thing. They doubled down on their homegrown talent and brought the luster back to New Japan. Again, you look at the New Japan, the 90s and AAA in the 90s, two major forces. And through the 2000s, they needed to kind of reinvent themselves, revitalize themselves. And New Japan did that 4 or 5 years ago. And now you have AAA looking to do that. And, it's star power, it's innovations, having cutting edge product, and of course, having the ability to get that out to people. And, New Japan's had shows on in Canada, they've had shows on in the UK over the years. I'm talking both live events and TV programming. AAA hasn't had any of that. And, you know, so I think that's had a lot to do with it.
And they've, I mean, for years, just going back to the late 90s when I first started chatting with Conan, it seems like there was always talk that one of these days, AAA, you know, it's coming, mm-hmm. it's coming. Why the long delay? Why has it taken it? Why did it take so long to expand into the United States?
Oh, they've had partnerships over the years with different individuals and companies, and they've tried things, and it for whatever reason, those things didn't get the results. But a lot of it starts and ends with, you know, getting the right deal in place and being true to what the brand is and what it is, that authenticity, not trying to repackage as another company or another thing, just AAA. And then finding a way to get people to nibble on that product and buy into the storylines, buy into the talent. And for whatever reason, that it didn't happen. It didn't happen from the late 90s to the 2000s. You might say that they, you know, it was the regime at that time. Right now you have Dorian Roldan. I think he just turned 30. He's intricately involved with their expansion efforts, and he's very ambitious, young, bright guy. I'm acting like I'm a 50-year-old. He's like 6 years younger than me. But, you know, he works his ass off. And so he's been very ambitious about pursuing these kind of things. And now they're finally happening. I think before you had his uncle, Antonio Pena, you know, he was running a lot of, like, almost like Vince. He was doing a lot of things, but it was only him. You can only be so successful when you know, focusing on so many things. I always say, you know, multitasking, you're fucking up multiple things at the same time because you really can't give it your all, you know?
So what are his areas that he? I mean, is he? I mean, not as widespread as Vince, but I mean, is he involved in the creative capacity, or does he primarily focus on the business side of things?
Everything. He's involved with everything, but he's also got a great team that handles the day-to-day things. Conan's the booker. They also have other people on that creative team. They have an amazing production team. So his management style is he wants everyone to collaborate, work together. He participates. He tracks things from afar. But he definitely delegates. Whereas Vince, he delegates kind of, sort of, but not really.
Right.
And anything in wrestling, you look at TNA and the joke that John Gaberk is as their head of talent relations. You got to surround yourself with quality people, qualified people at that, that are part of your leadership. And Triple done a good job with that. I would argue that John Gaberk had no qualifications to head talent relations or to head their marketing and branding efforts. He never held any of those positions at WWE. He was the guy that coordinated the audio, the lighting, the cameras. He wouldn't even get permits from towns to shoot on location, as we would find out when we showed up. But he would coordinate some of those second unit kind of shoots, is the best way to put it, where you're shooting a vignette with a guy, and he would kind of just get all the logistics down. But he wasn't involved with creative meetings ever. He never was involved with any wrestling finishes or talent recruitment, talent assessment, talent development, management of talent, payroll, you know, all the jobs he has at TNA. And I think you're seeing, you know, the last year, just again talking about Dixie Carter, who she surrounded herself with, the results. You know, you were only as good as the people you surround yourself with. And when WWE is on fire, you know, look, WWE was on the brink of bankruptcy. Jim Ross was involved with the company. Jim Cornette was involved with the company. They had some really talented people, and they went from being on the brink of bankruptcy to recruiting the next generation of talent, Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H, all those guys. And they boomeranged back with a fury with guys like Jim Ross, involved with creative, involved with talent relations, same with Corny and recruiting guys, having good eye for guys. And it's because because Vince, you know, had a good circle. And I think that when you see Vince has a good circle, the results speak for themselves.
You mentioned Gaborik. How did he get the job then?
He clearly sold him on a false bill of goods, because, you know, I remember the first press release about it, and they talk about his qualifications. And I remember like getting 6 calls from other people at WWE, and we're like, yeah, when did that happen?
Wow.
I mean, again, do you fault him or do you fault Dixie for not following up. I look at the thing with MVP, and he's a straight-up patsy on what's going on. It's standard protocol when you have a guy like Hernandez that's leaving a company to look at his release papers or to look at his agreement, his contract with that company to make sure that you can engage them. It's standard protocol and has been with WWE in every major office since forever because you don't want to expose yourself to unnecessary litigation. And so as the head of talent relations, that's the standard protocol. Somehow MVP, because he recommended the guy, all of a sudden is being held accountable for no one doing their due diligence. When he's like wrestlers recommend guys every day. That's just how the business is. But if you talk to someone at WWE, they'll say, listen, we just got to see your paperwork before we can talk. Just straight up, we can't say another thing until you show us what you got to make sure we're good to go. We're kosher here. And look, that obviously didn't occur, and I think it's kind of appalling that, it's the classic pass the heat. Oh, it was MVP's fault. That's just, it's laughable that, number one, that Dixie bought that. Number two, that TNA would even conduct their business that way. But, again, accountability goes only so far, it seems like. So they're only fooling themselves on these kind of things at the end of the day. They're only losing talent. They're only exposing themselves to potential litigation because of that. And it's unfortunate because TNA's been around for 12, 13 years now. They've had some incredible talent go through there. They've had moments where they've captured our interest and imagination. You look back when they went to Monday nights and there was like this electricity in the air. Oh, my God, they're going to go head-to-head. Look, they got all these guys. They got Sting. They got Hulk Hogan. They got Jeff Hardy. They got Mick Foley. They got Ric Flair. They got Kurt Angle. They got Christian. They got the NWO. They got AJ Styles. They got Samoa Joe. They got CM Punk. Think about all the guys that have gone through there. Think about the conversations they've had with guys like Jim Ross, Paul Heyman. The list goes on and on to come in there and manage it. Yet they haven't been able to make the right moves. And it's almost like at every fork in the road, they've unfortunately for their fans taken the wrong turn. And I don't want to see them fail because it would be horrible for wrestling because so many people would be out of work. And again, prove to networks, prove to licensing, prove to other business partners that Vince is the only guy who can figure this out. This is, and we don't want that. But it's obviously not looking great as we look towards the fall and what's on the horizon for them. But I truly want to see them succeed, and I was rooting for them. And the spring of 2010 when they went live, just like I was thrilled when they got the Spike deal. I was with WWE, and I went, fuck, that's awesome. That's creating a plan B for me. That's creating a plan B for this guy, that guy in on the roster. And you don't want to see a company like that fail, but at this, it gets you've covered it. At some point, you just throw your arms up, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm guessing what you're saying is that, that there's the working agreement between AAA and TNA has never been stronger?
Yeah, listen, that's not my area, but I'm just speaking as Court Bauer. And that has nothing reflecting on AAA. I'm just speaking what I see and this that's just – it's Conan will say it too. We have a podcast that's going to drop this Sunday. We're going to talk a little bit about it. We talked about it on our podcast late last week about it, just specifically the John Gaberk MVP thing. And listen, it is what it is. I mean, I could give you a bullshit answer. I can give you an honest answer, and I'm giving you the honest answer. It's just my experience working with him, my experience seeing what I've seen out of that company, and my frustration is that they could be more. They should be more. But it all boils down, like we said, to leadership. You have to surround yourself with quality people. And some people, some people – they learn on the job. So maybe John Gerber could have learned and figured it out. I think you have enough of a sample size that you can see that, it hasn't really improved much.
By all means, tell us about MLWRadio.com. I was enjoying the conversation this week. As I told you, I got a kick out of MSL talking about how he gets like daily updates from someone on Facebook to stop picking on Dave Lagana, TNA creative team member. That one made me chuckle, but you guys have a great product over there. Tell people about it.
Yeah, we have podcasts from guys like Jim Cornette, Kevin Sullivan, the New Japan crew, the Bullet Club specifically, not like Nakamura, but like the Bullet Club will have guys on there. They do their podcast literally from the Tokyo Dome Hotel every Saturday. So you get updates right now from what's going on over there as they struggle to get through the G1. They had a drunk Australian wrestler in the bathroom at the hotel last week, I think. And so you have that. You have Jim Cornette show. You have Kevin Sullivan show. We have shows with Disco Inferno, Conan, myself. I mean, think about it. You have offices representing New Japan all the way to Mexico and all points in between Lucha Underground and even when I was with Ring of Honor too. So you definitely get a nice sample size in terms of experience, perspective, crazy stories. We do a writer's room with a lot of the former writers, Alex Greenfield, myself, Andrew Goldstein. I'm going to get Brian Mann on. So we have an eclectic mix of just about anyone that's done anything in the business, in the ring, outside of the ring. And I think that kind of like the vibe is that, you know, just speak honestly. Don't try to be politically correct. And I think you could, like I said, like you mentioned, you know, getting someone getting Facebook messages. I think it's honest. You know, it's an honest raw take. It's been fun. I can't believe I've been doing this for over 3 years. But we have a lot of premium content there. We have exclusive VIP shows with, like I said, Sullivan, Cornette, myself, Conan, and so on and so forth. And they're a lot of fun. So if you want to check out and learn more about MLW Radio, just go to MLWRadio.com. It's funny, the actual podcast venture, number one, infinitely more financially successful than the wrestling league I had years ago. Number two, it's actually outlasted the wrestling league already by a year. Wow. So it's one of those things where I think people don't even know MLW stands for. It's just that's the podcast's name for some reason. I mean, it's not, you know, because of Major League Wrestling, but originally it started out as like this idea that MSL just pitched to me, like, listen, it would be kind of cool. What if we were to like just go back and do like a short series of podcasts just talking to all the MLW guys, and then at some point you've covered them all and that's it? And I said, well, if you want to go down that road, that's cool. And then one week we had a guest bail, and I was like, well, why don't you try to interview Conan? This guy just literally sent me a LinkedIn invitation. Yes, he did. And we started talking for the first time. This is 2011. It's like, I think he'd be really interesting to have on the podcast. So we got him on the podcast. He asked me to jump on the podcast. I wasn't doing podcasts, but I did it for Conan. And all of a sudden we had this unique chemistry, and that was in 2011, 2012, early 2012 maybe. And the rest is history. So it's funky how that turned out, but it's been a lot of fun.
Now, you say you have people representing – well, not officially representing, but some between Japan, Mexico, all you guys. What in God's name does Disco Inferno represent?
It represents a horrible taste in music, disco, not my favorite form of music. But, you know, it's funny because he was on the creative team in TNA.
Yes, he was.
And WCW. And and he has what I would say is very close to a – Vince Russo sensibility about creative. So, you know, we think about that spectrum though. We have Jim Cornette, who's fundamentally opposed to that kind of perspective on creative. And then you have Disco Inferno. And then you have people that have done, you know, the WWE writing thing. And you have people that have booked Mexico, or you have people that have booked their own companies, or, you know, and Kevin Sullivan, who's, you know, was influenced by Eddie Graham in Florida Championship Wrestling back in the 70s and was the booker in WCW when the invasion happened and all that stuff. So it's like you really kind of, in terms of booking, you got just about every philosophy represented on this thing, both ones I agree with and ones I totally am opposed to. And then but I always love it because it's such a different take, and I might not agree with it, but I'm like, you know, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I disagree for this reason or that reason, or I think that, you know, you're looking at it in a very narrow-minded way. But I personally love, I listen to the MSL Disco Inferno show from last Wednesday, and it's like really fun just to hear their take on things, their VIP show. Just, you know, in terms of like the Hulk Hogan thing, just different outlooks on it. They both had their own outlook on it. And Disco was kind of, in a way, not out. He wasn't defending what Hulk Hogan said, but he was like trying to give a devil's advocate look at it. And it was just an interesting discussion, you know. It's just not like just, you know, you can listen to so many wrestling podcasts and all of a sudden it becomes like you're hearing the same thing. And I definitely don't think you have that experience when you listen to MLW Radio. One, because on the occasion Conan will hit the bong. And then you have guys like MSL, just, you know, just quirky, oddball type guys.
And Disco. I love Glenn. Great guy. And the cool thing about him, I mean, he'll speak his mind.
Yep.
You can completely disagree with him. He doesn't get angry, and he can take a joke. I think he's just a great dude. And so I very, very rarely agree with his booking philosophies and opinions, but I still get the biggest kick out of that guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a lot of fun, and he's a bit of a provocateur, which I love too.
Well, I want to jump back into this whole MVP Hernandez thing because, you know, I know TNA screwed up. They dropped the ball. But there are people in TNA who feel like Hernandez wasn't forthcoming with them. And so even though there's people that will say, yeah, the office screwed up, Hernandez should get some of the blame for this. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Did he falsely represent himself? I'm not privy to that information. I don't know. It would appear that he probably in some capacity did fuck up in a royally big way, that now he's he's in purgatory. He's neither in Lucha Underground. He's not going to be on the TNA. Where do you go? I know he was doing shots in Mexico. So, you know, that, yeah, there has to, he owns some accountability for this. But again, you're a booking office. You're going to have to look at these contracts. This is a daily protocol. Whenever you look at talent, hey, you're coming from WWE. I got to see your release. I mean, it's just that basic. And unless someone's literally falsifying documents, then that's something else. Hernandez, I mean, if he wasn't forthcoming, but they didn't ask, was he aware of the particulars of his deal? If he had I don't know if he was released, or I don't know if he still had a contract. I don't know if he felt like his contract was breached. I don't know what his position is on his El Rey Lucha Underground contract, or he maybe didn't feel he even had a contract. I don't know. So I can't even speculate on what his position is. So it's hard to hold him absolutely accountable. But again, at some point you have some semblance of awareness of what you're free to do. A lot of these wrestling, I've seen a lot of wrestling contracts from WWE on down. You got to read the fine print. Some of them are written like they're written, like almost like was that written with crayon? Others are very meticulous, but you have to do your due diligence as a professional, just like you were to go to any job. If you were to leave one company for another company, you have to be accountable, but you also have to represent yourself. That's your reputation. You're building a new relationship, or you're trying to rebuild one, like obviously Hernandez was with TNA. So you definitely have to have some ownership of this. But again, I think you got to look at everyone and see, well, who's accountable and where did they fuck up? And first, definitely fact TNA by overlooking such an obvious staple of what you do in talent relations. They definitely, you can point the finger number one to them and probably, yeah, to Hernandez, but we don't, again, know how he interpreted it and you know, who knows. But it's one of those things where right now TNA can't afford litigation. You know, they don't, that's another cost. That's another expense. They probably do have some sort of law firm under a retainer, because the name of wrestling is, it can be a highly litigious line of work and business. So you probably have a retainer, but now you're going to have to possibly deal with defending yourself and contract tampering. Let's say it's just something like that. That's a pain in the ass. You don't want that right now. You have enough issues. You have enough fires to put out, right? You just want to focus on being the best TNA you can, not have to now deal with that. And now they have to deal with that. And it was, you know, it was all avoidable, because if they saw that they saw his contract and said, oh, we can't touch this guy, talk to this guy for 90 days, can't even talk about a deal for 90 days. Okay, that's fine. It's not the end of the world. I don't think it would have changed their business in any capacity. Hernandez, if he, let's say that was the case, he had a 90-day clause, probably he's getting paid for those 90 days, because otherwise you can't really enforce it. And so, okay, we'll talk in 3 months. It's that simple. But, you know, so much in wrestling, so much drama, I think, can be avoided. But, of course, wrestling is kind of built on drama. You would be out of business if you didn't have drama, right? If you didn't have drama in this business, it wouldn't be very fun to probably report on it. And I'm sure there are days you're like, oh, my God, there's too much drama.
Yeah, for sure. But it TNA has always, much like WCW, it's always managed to keep things extremely interesting. If they do go away, I don't even know what it's going to be like. But that's just it. What do you think happens with them as far as, we'll just say American television? Are they on American television at the end of this year, sometime next year? Or is this Destination America thing the end of them in the U.S.?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you just look at the last 12 months. They were on Spike. That relationship ended. They were on Destination America. That relationship appears to be coming to a close. You take that baggage in to an office and pitch your product to channel X, Y, or Z, they're going to really have to think about what's the upside, because 52 weeks of original programming at a price that is, you know, episode to episode compared to, say, you know, Bigfoot hunting or whatever, Bar Rescue, it's very economical as an option, but they're only committing to those shows for 13 to 18 episode runs, and then they're just recycling it three, four, five times throughout a year. So they're not making it, you know, it's a lot more cost effective to have that kind of programming or reruns of Cops, because you buy a batch and then you just rerun them to death. Whereas, you know, wrestling, the old thing is you get original program for 52 weeks and it's just this cheap, but you're still committing for that dollar for 52 weeks a year in a climate where advertising money is starting to shrink. Networks are still growing in terms of, oh, you got another channel on your lineup. Okay. But what cable carriers want to spend on those channels is like pennies on the dollars for what it was 10, 15 years ago. So you have the revenue is shrinking for cable companies to create new programming that's expensive programming. They're looking for cost-effective, cheap, affordable programming that's almost evergreen, that you can replay, rerun at any point in time, and you don't have to worry about it being specific to a date. And that's a big issue for wrestling, because the calling card for Vince on down was value, 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 52 weeks, no reruns. And I think we're starting to enter a climate where they're looking at shorter runs for less money, and that's proven with Lucha Underground. Look at Lucha Underground. You know, it's 39 episodes, and they obviously have a certain price for that. And you have to figure out how to bridge that gap to make that show work, to make money off that show. And if you're looking to get that commitment of 52 weeks a year, if you're TNA going into your third deal in 12 months, it's a hard sell. You're damaged goods, and it's they're going to look for star power. And I can tell you, when I used to pitch networks back when I had MLW, the networks don't know what the hell wrestling is in terms of, like, okay, there's different leagues and each of their guys have contracts, boom, boom. No, they think you can just go in there and say, okay, so can you get us Hulk Hogan? Can you get us The Rock? Can you get us Steve Austin? And they don't understand the nature of that, the economics of that. They just think, oh, it's all part of circuits. You can just get a guy. And it's not that simple. So when they go into these meetings, there's going to be an expectation of star power. There's going to be an expectation that they can deliver on ratings. And the problem is TNA sample size when it comes to ratings and demographics and their ad card aren't going to be selling points for another partner. And the last 2 years, I don't know why they haven't – they have an on-demand channel. I've seen it on Roku as an example. Why they haven't tried to find some sort of – it's not even a viable plan B, but another revenue stream to at least try to – if you had in your worst-case scenario be a streaming platform and you had to scale back things to the size of Ring of Honor, you can maybe make that work as a over-the-top streaming platform, an SVOD. But they have never even nurtured those revenue streams. It's been pretty meat and potatoes. So they haven't even WWE, the network's there partially because it's a plan C or D in case one day USA doesn't want them, or if this piracy thing becomes so catastrophic with pay per view that they think they're fucked. You know, but this has helped them. It's become an opportunity for them, and I think in the long run it will work for them. Whereas with this TNA, they have nothing. It's this or nothing. It's do or die, and they already have this infrastructure set up. I've seen TNA On Demand, I think is the name of the service, but they haven't really ever done anything with it. It's kind of puzzling.
A lot of things about TNA are puzzling. I want to jump back here for the last few questions to AAA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously this time around, it looks like you guys are reaching out to the pro wrestling crowd, which is perfectly logical. The one thing, you know, I talked earlier about New Japan just seeming like they're a little more firmly entrenched in the U.S. I think the advantage AAA has is there's such a big Hispanic population in the United States. Forget the pro wrestling crowd, you know, in general. How do you reach that audience, that casual Hispanic viewer out there that can, you know, maybe likes pro wrestling? I mean, is that a major goal of yours?
Well, here's the beauty of this venture is that you have guys like Ray, Alberto, Conan. They're bilingual, and the Latin media is much more receptive to wrestling and covering it. And English-speaking media is now really starting to get there too. Look at Rolling Stone starting to do coverage. The Big Lead, USA Today, and so on are doing more and more coverage, which is good. The Latin media has been really receptive. We've had guys doing a lot of heavy Latin media, and that's something you can't do with an American English only product. You don't have that diversity. You don't have that dynamic that you can really call upon. Even WWE, they have the Lucha Dragons and the Matadors. Not exactly guys who are being showcased. If they wanted to put those guys out there, they could, you know, with the media, but they're not the top starters. You know, you're talking about Rey Mysterio in the main event for Triple Mania and getting him to do media in L.A. for a day or something like that. You can cover a lot. And that's an advantage we have with this, and being able to connect with that media has been amazing. It's been like a layup. It's been really awesome. Even we've been able to do media like with Rolling Stone. We have something coming out. Even the cable, they have some cable magazines that are, you know, industry magazines that are going to be covering this. That's good for just building the profile of the company. But we've been able to do things that you just typically can't do for a wrestling venture because of that unique ability to hit both languages. And that's great. I mean, that's something that, you know, look. The Hispanic demographic in the U.S. is just going to continue to grow and continue to grow and continue to grow. And the media outs are plentiful from New York to L.A. and all points in between. And so that's something that we're going to exploit. And, you know, New Japan, I think they can definitely continue to grow here. But the Japanese media comparatively is a bit smaller. You know, there's a Japanese media here for sure, especially here in New York, L.A. But the Hispanic media is infinitely bigger.
Is a long-term goal to get television in the United States with English commentary? I mean, I know you can get it on some of the Spanish language networks now. Is that something you see realistically happening anywhere in the near future?
You know, you would like to say so, but you know, the nature of, like we just covered about TNA looking for another partner. It'd be great if that, like I say, yeah, we're going to pursue that and we'll see what happens. It's not that easy. You know, it's almost like hitting the lotto at this point. It's not that easy to get a TV deal. Is it impossible? No, but it's very hard. It's very hard. Is that something that we're looking at? Of course. Are we looking at it right now? Not exactly. We're realistic that it doesn't happen overnight, and you have to have again, it's part of the building your foundation. I think it's something that down the road, it can definitely be something we're going to pursue. Right now, if we got other things we got to kind of do before we get there. You know, we have our work cut out before we go and say, oh, well, next is TV. I think anyone that says we're going to start right now on TV, you need to build a track record. You need to build a profile to create leverage, or you're going to end up with a shit deal that they have you by the nuts, and then all of a sudden you're fucked and you're off the network, and now you're back to where you started. You went around the block and ended up at the same place. You got to create leverage, or you're going to be in a vulnerable position. You can create leverage if you have, you know, an option A, B, and C in TV and other avenues. Then you're going to be cooking. If you just go to one hat in hand, they know that they got you. Now, if you're able to take that network like UFC did with Spike in 2005 and blow it up, then you've created leverage. But again, look at UFC. They had to sink in several million and buy basically their way onto Spike and take a big risk to make that happen, and it blew up. I mean, the crowds came for that UFC fight night with Forrest Griffin, but it didn't happen. You know, it happened with risk. It didn't happen without risk. And so my job is to try to take calculated risks, but I don't want to, you know, everyone in wrestling just, you throw money at something and you expect it to solve everything, and it doesn't. You need to have a real game plan, and you need to have a real focus on each step of that, and the conviction that each step of that is worth taking its time and not panicking and rushing through just to get to the goal, because then the goal probably isn't going to be what you had imagined it to be. You know, I started out, one of the first things I did in wrestling was run my own company, and I learned from a lot of mistakes I made, and I became better because of it. You know, if I just said, it was great, man, everything was awesome. Well, it closed for a reason. And what were those reasons? And you have to learn from those mistakes. If you learn from those mistakes, you become a better person, whatever you do in life. And I think that, you know, I've learned from those mistakes, and I see, you know, you can make some expensive mistakes, and you got to learn from them. And, you know, that's my job now, is to try to make the best decisions for what we're doing here and blow this thing up.
Okay, if TV is a long shot at this point, obviously WWE Network, New Japan World, could we see a AAA streaming service?
It's something I'd love to do, because, you know, it would take a lot of time, a lot of work, because I would like there to be some sort of English component to it again, because there's such a great library. You know, Eddie Guerrero, the Jake the Snake Conan feud from the 90s, the Gringos Locos, just so much cool stuff. Even the 2000 stuff, as a company was in like this transitional phase, would be fascinating to take a look at. Kurt Angle's run in AAA is interesting. Jeff Jarrett had an amazing run with his wife Karen there. So there's a lot of interesting footage that might be commercially viable here. But also just seeing like the early days of Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Psychosis, and Conan, all those guys, I think there's a lot to that library. And it might be part of a way to put out the product, and maybe some of their – not their biggest shows, but their secondary shows. Let's say like the old In Your House level show, you know, the B show, not the A show when it comes to pay-per-views. It might be a way to deliver that kind of content. But again, you have to be ready to pull the trigger on that. I know there's an audience willing to pay that money for it, and you know, you have to be able to market it. And anyone thinks you can just do internet marketing and grassroots, that probably isn't going to work out so well. So it's kind of like everything has – there's almost like a domino effect. Things have to line up, and then once you pull the trigger, everything kind of affects the other thing and influences it, hopefully in a positive way. And that's how this has to work. Everything's very methodical with how I'm laying it out, because one misstep and you really can trip up fast, because we're just coming out of the gates now, you know. So we have to figure out which step goes first, and because that impacts the next step. And you want to make sure that every business decision, every venture is growing on itself and can help the next level, and you're building it, and you're not doing it out of sequence. And sometimes wrestling is a little bit like the Wild West. You know, everyone's going out looking for gold, and the next big thing is, oh, it's streaming, it's this, it's that, and everyone's just looking and think they're going to get rich. Very few do. My thing is having as many options as you can, and each of them rolling out in a very specific way. I'm very OCD about how this has to work.
Sell people on this. People like me who are, you know, I've seen on just enough AAA to be dangerous. I'll be ordering this show, even though you guys didn't bother to ask me if my Vikings played that night. They do. And a little bit disappointed that I have to miss the Hall of Fame game. But love the price tag, $29.95 for the HD feed. If you don't care about HD, you can get it even cheaper. It's available everywhere, Comcast, DirecTV, Dish Network, across the board. But just for the people out there that don't know, you know, I mean, is this going to be easy for them to follow? I thought one of the things that Matt Stryker did well with New Japan on that pay-per-view was explaining things. He's in the play, you know, just kind of catching people up, giving people the history. He's in the play-by-play role this time around. So for somebody out there who just hasn't seen much or hasn't seen any AAA, how do you sell them on this event?
Well, you know, I think he's actually going to be the guy that's going to like use Hugo, who calls Lucha down there for AAA on their Spanish feed too. I think he's going to be kind of using Hugo as like almost his Wikipedia, so Hugo can like kind of, with high energy, because he has high energy, explain everything and why it happens, why the hair and hair matches are bigger than title matches. This is the history of this rivalry. This is why this is happening. And Matt Stryker is almost like the guy on the couch that's sitting next to you with a beer watching this saying, hey, what's that about? What's the deal with that? Explain this trios match. How does this concept work? And what's the backstory on this guy versus that guy? And then you have Hugo that's going to be able to give you that delivery, and he gives such the amount of energy and passion he has is amazing. So that's kind of the dynamic there. It's like being able to have the guy in the booth that has exceptional product knowledge and authenticity, and Stryker kind of being the dude like you would be asking those questions. So it's a unique dynamic, and they have great chemistry. When I produced the countdown special, they quickly were just clicking, and I could see the rapport and just kind of working with them on what I had hoped and what I hoped for my expectations for the pay-per-view and how I want their kind of vibe to be. And they thought, you know, that's kind of probably what they were going to do. So, you know, I think it's going to work out pretty good having Stryker in that role. I thought Stryker did an amazing job on the New Japan show. I know people were like, oh, Stryker, really? Oh. And then all of a sudden to come out of the show, like, god damn, Stryker, man, he was the fucking glue.
Well, and then obviously, you know, he does well with Lucha Underground,
right?
And now he's doing this, and there's, I mean, I haven't heard anyone complain like, oh man, Matt Stryker's calling the AAA pay-per-view. Not one person.
No, and I think New Japan changed a lot, because that show changed a lot for him, because you got to see him in a different light. And I think that show really helped him. I really do. And I think Triple Mason would be another step, because he's got such passion, such a wealth of knowledge about Lucha now, having called Lucha Underground, having familiarity with a lot of the talent on the roster from AAA because they worked in Lucha Underground. And he has great chemistry already with Hugo, so I think they're going to really vibe well off of each other. I think they're going to have a great feel. And Hugo, my God, having worked with the guy at WWE, he's awesome. He's a character, and he's a real good dude. I didn't realize this, but he's also like a traveling minister. He like goes to prisons in South America.
Hugo?
Yeah, he'll go and preach in prisons in like South America. He's like, yeah, they'll have machine guns on me because it's that dangerous. And he'll, you know, he does this like a few times a month.
Wow.
I think he gives away a portion of his earnings to help these causes. And he is like, it's like, there's some people I question about their like religious activities worked in the wrestling business. Is this like their plan B just to, you know, make a living? Whereas Hugo literally is giving his money away to like he's the real deal. And I'm not a particularly religious guy, but he's a good soul. You know what I mean? He's a real good soul, and he's a character. He started wrestling in the 60s, and he wrestled down in Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Mexico, WWWF. He's managed guys like Abdul the Butcher. I mean, he's had his own career before, you know, transitioned to being an announcer for the last 17 years. And he's got such an authentic delivery. Just shooting the countdown special, to see him, I was like, I need a big fired up promo to finish this thing off. And my God, he can turn it on. It's you know, you don't see that enough in the announcing today. Everyone's almost too cool or chic and has to look almost like a, you know, like they're doing the metrosexual thing, whereas Hugo is just like old school, like, you know, like Jim Ross. And I love it.
Stryker's got the metrosexual thing covered.
Yes, he does, actually, but in the right way, the kind of way. Yeah, he gets heat for it, but here's the thing, he can back it up. He can back it up with what he's talking about. He's been arrested. He's been in there, and I think he's really refined and polished his broadcast game in the last 6-8 months, to the point where I think you're going to see on August 9th the best Stryker there's probably been in the booth, and I think their chemistry is going to be awesome. I'm really excited to hear them call it. I'm really excited. And for Matt, I think it's cool. I mean, this year alone, he's worked with quite an eclectic group of guys. He's worked with Vampiro. He's worked with Jim Ross. And now he's working with Hugo Savinovich. I mean, think about that. I know he's done announcing for indies and throughout the East Coast, but it's funny. Look at this guy. He's really been here, there, and everywhere. And so he's definitely in demand, and that's a good thing to be in this business.
Those chapters of the Matt Stryker book someday will definitely be fascinating. And it's Rey Mysterio taking on Miss Disease, the former Sin Cara, the former Mystico. Maybe we should leave out the Sin Cara part and just say the former Mystico dream match. Mm-hmm. And then you have hair versus hair, Alberto El Patron against Brian Cage, same guy, Cage from Lucha Underground. And right. The list goes on. Everybody can find the full list of matches and all of that good stuff. Court, give me the website where you want people to check all of this out.
Go to AAALucha.com, AAALucha.com, AAALucha.com. They also are on Twitter at the same address, AAALucha. That's AAALucha on Twitter. And the same with Facebook, same address and everything. And, it's a great match between Mysterio and Mysticis. You have two guys that, if you look at the parallels in the 2000s, you have Rey Mysterio, who went global, you know, winning the title in WWE, becoming a household name in the 2000s, just building what he did in the 90s to a different level. And meanwhile, in the mid-2000s, you had Mystico, now known as Mysticis, shattering all box office records in Arena Mexico on a weekly basis, packing in like 16, 17,000 every Friday night in 2006. Every Friday night, 16 to 17,000 people were coming out to see this guy. It's big, big, big attraction. Then he goes to WWE. He gets what I would always refer to as the snake bitten run there. He comes back to AAA and kind of reinvents himself. You know, he's been in great health the last 18 months since coming in. He looks really good. And this is the match that Vince at one point wanted to do at WrestleMania. He was going to do this match. There was going to be like 80,000, 60,000 people wearing masks, and he was going to do some goofy Guinness Book World Record with most, you know, people in attendance wearing masks ever for the match. But that match never came to fruition for various reasons, and now that match is finally happening in 2015. So that's really cool to see those two guys with those parallels with this match that eluded Vince McMahon, and not too many matches elude Vince McMahon, seeing them be able to finally have this. And this is Rey Mysterio's return to pay-per-view after some time.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see him, and again, it's a big stage, big, you know, production value, pyro, big-ass entrances, 20,000 people, state-of-the-art arena, same arena WWE uses when they go to Mexico City. It is awesome. And then you have Alberto in a hair versus hair grudge match with Brian Cage, and this is like that classic national pride thing. Alberto, for the first time in his career, got busted open by Brian Cage, and then they, at a different time, put the American flag on him. They beat him up, put the American flag on him, and then Brian Cage –
How dare they?
Afterwards, he put his foot on him as he's buried under the flag and flexed. Major heat with that. So it's a national pride issue on top of the hair versus hair. And Alberto's the world champion, so the ramifications of this match are very interesting. And then you have the classics. You know, you have the legendary Blue Demon Jr. on the show. You have La Parca. They're teaming up. You have this amazing three-way trios match. Trios are six-man style matches, but this is like nothing you've seen because these guys break gravity when they go. It's going to be Jack Evans and Angelico, who you're probably familiar with from Lucha Underground, and Fenix teaming up to take on Phantasma.
Can I call him Phoenix?
You can call him Phoenix. Right. I call him, and some people call it Angelico. But you have Phantasma, Pentagon Jr., and Tejano Jr., and they're all – these two teams are challenging the reigning champions, Los Hell Brothers, for the titles, and that's going to be a crazy match. You got nine men just going crazy, and then you have the classic AAA match. It's an eight-man match where you have a dude, a woman, an exotico, which is basically a cross-dresser, and
something in between.
Yeah, and a mini teaming up to take on another team facing the same breakdown of a man, a woman, a crossdresser, and a mini. And that's a Antonio Pena created match back in the day. So it's a staple of AAA. And those matches are freaking entertaining as hell. So you have in that match Drago Goyokong, who is Super Porky's daughter, very charismatic, very entertaining. Dynastia and Pimpinella, who a lot of people are familiar with from Lucha Underground, got amazing. Oh my God. And meeting him backstage, he literally covered me with glitter at Lucha Underground at the temple one day. Conan introduced me. He goes, "This is Pimpinella." And he goes, "Oh, hello. Nice to meet you." And he like showered me with glitter.
Nice.
The classic Conan rib. And then they're taking on Daga, Sexy Star, Mini Psycho Clown, who is a character, and Mamba. So it's a stacked lineup. it's going to be a fun show. There's other matches I definitely recommend checking out because it's different. There's going to be some cutting edge wrestling. There's some variety. There's star power. There's familiar faces. There's big production value. Like I said, there's going to be the Mission Impossible set's going to be part of the elaborate entrance, English commentary, and it's half the price of a UFC show. And it's even cheaper if you get it as an iPay-per-view or with a standard fee. It's only $19.95. So it's worth checking out. And this is just phase one. So if you buy this, sit back and enjoy the ride because there's more of it coming.
And it's just AAA's WrestleMania. I mean, this is you're seeing their biggest show of the year, just like we saw with New Japan back on January 4th. I think it's a hell of a price. I'm looking forward to it. And you mentioned Mission Impossible. You mentioned the Flaming Guitar. I don't want you to give anything away, but I'll just say, and you can drop me a hint. Mm-hmm. Maybe we see Tom Cruise shot out of a cannon.
I think Conan is going to be playing Tom Cruise in some capacity. He has the wig. I know that. I don't know if anyone's going to buy him as Tom Cruise, but we'll see if he has a good Ethan Hunt.
Well, as long as you're being, if it's shot out of a cannon, I don't think anyone's going to know. As long as they see the black hair, and they're just going to assume, wow, that's Tom Cruise. I'll never tell.
Note to self, telling Conan he's getting shot out of a cannon. That's my next phone call when we're finished with this podcast.
Well, it's going to be a hell of a show. I'm looking forward to it. I have been waiting, just like New Japan, some English commentary to get on board with this. Everybody, August 9th, Triple Mania. And also, check out mlradio.com. Great price over there for the bonus features, but you can also check out everything for free over there. Court, thank you very much.
Jason, let's do this again soon. I want to get you back on the podcast on MLW Radio because there's one or two stories that I held off involving myself that you were privy to that were super embarrassing because you were actually on the phone when one of them transpired. That I think it's time we actually share that story. Conan's not even aware of it, but I think it's time we share that with the audience. So we're going to get you back on MLW Radio in the next few weeks, and we'll finally drop that story, which is just very humiliating to myself.
I have one of my own, as I've told you, so it won't just be you. We'll embarrass ourselves. I look forward to it.
All right, my man. Take care.
You too.